Thank you very much, James. That was very insightful, and I think has given us a lot to think over as we look at the models that are going to be used in the ACT prison or correctional facility. We do now have some time for questions, and I'd just like to point out that we do have some other people in the room who can also provide some insight, and that includes Ermagard from Vine at AusHelp, Deb Wybron from Women in Prisons, and Bradley Foxman from the ACT Mental Health Consumer Network, as well as our esteemed professor. So does anybody have any questions?
The questioner asked about cross-cultural issues.
Yeah, cross-cultural issues, that's what you're saying. Well, of course, the biggest cross-cultural issue is our own Indigenous people. And ACT obviously doesn't have a huge number, but they still are overrepresented and will be in these institutions. And in, many people will know that in Australia, one of the reasons that we do pay such attention to deaths in custody is because of Indigenous Australians who were, particularly in the 80s, dying in huge, overly represented numbers. So it is important to take into account cultural differences, but also gender differences, so women as well. The fact is, for women in custody, you saw in the community, men are much more likely to kill themselves. In custody, women actually, their levels elevate to that of men. So cross-cultural issues and gender issues are obviously very important as well. Thanks for pointing that out.
Any other questions? Simon?
The questioner noted that, even with a state-of-the-art prison, a number of people are keen to see that people get the service they need after release. He asked what was being done in Victoria.
Yeah, we don't do much, or not enough, because we wouldn't have 250 per 100,000 committing suicide. But the starting point is, and you have a great advantage in the ACT because a small population in a relatively small area. So it's reconnecting people to community services, and particularly as people prepare to leave the prison, have an exit plan. Many prisoners will tell you that it's incredibly difficult to walk out of the prison and essentially have nothing to go to, particularly if they're in prison for any length of time. As I mentioned, they'll be estranged from family, friends, supports. They wouldn't be there if they had a great life to begin with, generally. And if they do, they'll go back to probably an okay life. So really what I mean concretely is, once people have been identified in the prison through these screening and triage and treatment systems, is to connect them while they're still in prison with community services that address the basic needs. So their psychiatric needs, health needs, housing needs, financial needs. I mean, a concrete example, the prison that I mentioned, we started in British Columbia in 1990, again, a modern prison, quite a remarkable prison. We essentially found that the biggest problem prisoners had when they left is not having access to money. And so we actually brought in the equivalent of Centrelink into the prison. There was an officer in the prison, a Centrelink officer, who essentially made sure that when they left, they had enough money to have, to be able to leave and have some funds, housing, those sorts of things. So these very basic amenities that many of us take for granted are the foundation, and then special attention to the ones who already have identified with mental health problems. So the NGOs are invaluable, as are the health services and the public mental health services and forensic services.
Just to add a bit to that, too, I think we
need... This is Deb from Women in Prisons.
Deb Wybron from ACT Women in Prisons. Is we need to be really mindful of those people doing short-term sentences, because there's usually never anything in the way of training or service provision set up for those people. And a lot of our women go on that merry-go-round of recidivism for very short terms. So they lose a lot, they're imprisoned, they're not supported, and they're put back out in the community still unsupported. So they're our most vulnerable people, the women doing short-term sentences.
And people may know it, but the reality is that most people don't have much money in that. But what's very typical is they'll have a flat. When they go to prison, there's no one basically to go and pay the rent, take care of it. And the landlords have the right to seize their assets and basically dispose of them to pay for those debts. Or they have storage lockers they can't pay for. So very often they're leaving with nothing. women and men. And so these are, you know, it is important. And like I said, the fact is the prison itself is part of the community. So it's a matter of just making sure that there's a bridge to that community, and particularly identifying the vulnerable in that transition. And here it should be a great, I mean, some of the states it's woeful, because imagine WA. You could be from, you know, there's no prison north of, in the Kimberley, no prison north of that area. And you could be basically released from a prison in Perth and have to basically make your way home somehow with no resources. So in ACT, it should be much, much more effective.
Thank you for mentioning Centrelink. What would you say if the Centrelink payment for the first 14 days after a person leaves jail is exactly half what anybody else would get for that 14 days? That's all.
Yeah, that's it. So imagine, you know, somebody who has to basically find an apartment, probably get, you know, clothing. They would only have what they brought into the prison, unless they have, you know, somewhere where they've kept things, food, you know, everything else. So I mean, you set people up for failure. This, and again, this has been my experience over my life. I would very often leave either secure prisons or hospitals at night, you know, in a nice car paid for by my employer. But I would often pass people who'd been released that day, either walking down, this is in Canada, freeway, or taking a bus, you know, away from the institution. So it is very difficult for people. So things like that just, I think, obviously don't make any sense at all. It's hard enough to get a flat. I don't know about your rental accommodation here, but in Victoria, most people can't get flats, let alone saying, you know, that you're from a prison and you're not able to have a deposit because you can't secure, say, a one-year lease or something. So.
The questioner raised the matter of governance. Traditionally, prisons have been overwhelmingly concerned with containment and security rather than the environmental factors that Professor Ogloff had been talking about. How was it possible to ensure on a continuing basis that the necessary concern for the prison environment is integrated into the overall management of the prison, rather than being regarded as a non-core issue to be dealt with by ancillary programs?
Well, I think, first of all, I should say we're light years ahead. And so when you go to prisons around Australia, the vast majority of them are actually quite modern and appropriate. There's some exceptions, but generally that's the case. But it starts with governance and leadership at the top, and setting, you know, very clear rules, role modeling, training of staff, many staff, you know, the recruitment of staff. Again, that's become difficult with the financial, prior to the financial crisis, with the financial boom. You know, in our state, in Victoria, they built two new prisons within the last 2 years. They had billboards, you know, come and work for corrections, and they couldn't recruit prison officers. Whereas, you know, at some points in life with financial crisis, you'd get university-educated people becoming prison officers. So the reality is that it's identifying, recruiting staff, having very clear rules, and a clear culture that develops that's not tolerant of these things. So it's very possible. In prisons, it happens. We see it in Victoria. Certainly, there are some very well-run prisons which have very good cultures. And I don't mean they're soft on prisoners and prisoners get away with things. I mean the rules are very clear. There's a high degree of structure. There's fairness. Officers have value in their job because they're not just guarding people. They're actually responsible for managing the range of needs of the individual. So it's instilling a culture. And I think, again, the best opportunity is when you've got a new prison to do that. And it's not just the building. The building is the last thing that matters. Both in Tasmania, people will have heard of Risdon Prison. It's a notorious prison. When I first came, did a review of their punishment unit, and it was based on a prison design from Alabama, which I was familiar with. And imagine in Hobart in the winter, it's probably colder than here. You leave your prison, your cell, and you're actually in the yard. You're not in a building. And so, and the management units, they were really, you'd go into a series of cages. So you'd be in a cage, literally, almost like a cat run, so you couldn't touch the other guy who's in this other cage. And by the time that prison, they've now built a new prison, by the time RISD was decommissioned and now changed into a different purpose, one-third of people were in some form of management in the prison. It made it worse and worse. Right? So it's changing the culture from that terrible old building to the new one. But you cannot have a new building without a new culture. So the hospital I work in opened in 2000. It replaced Victorian institutions that you can now tour. So people will come to Victoria, they go and look at these old institutions, which are now tourist sites. They were housing mental health patients 10 years ago. And when the Thomas Emily Hospital opened, it was expected that things like aggression would be reduced, self-harm would be reduced, damage to furniture. We actually reviewed it in the first year and two of opening, and all those things were actually up. There were higher rates of all these things because the culture itself didn't change. So it's the culture first, the building second. And the only way to instill it I know of is clear policies, very strong leadership from professional correctional managers. There's a misguided belief that, say, in Victoria, that because you might have been, say, a chief inspector of police or a superintendent of police, that those skills are transferable to running a modern prison. That's typically not the case. Even within policing, in, say, Victoria, where there is a large custody center the police run, the people who run that have very special skills, even though they're senior police.
I'm going to have to coach if I'm conscious of time. So two of you put your hand up. So if you can both ask very brief questions...
And I'll be brief too.
So we might get both of them in, but that would have to be the last.
The questioner asked how it was possible to get the whole of government taking responsibility for attending to the needs of prisoners after they cease to be the responsibility of corrections.
It's a big question, which is really how do you get the whole of government to support people as they're leaving housing and so forth. Again, the only way to do it is by first having government buy-in, but also having what's very common now, you know, regular committees that meet of those representatives and begin to deal with it. There's often very goodwill in housing and other agencies, and it's a matter of bringing them to the table, and they'll help you sort that out. So it's working collectively and effectively together.
Mr. Bradley Foxelwyn, President, ACT Mental Health Consumer Network, said that his network was looking at the point of transition between the prison and the community, about leaving the prison. He was pleased to hear from someone from ACT Mental Health about the vocational systems being set up within the prison. He noted the stress that Professor Ogloff had put on the social relational dynamics that exist or do not exist in the prison situation. He said that the network was interested because of the high percentage of people with mental health problems coming to prison. The consumer network was making efforts to develop a peer support network and services to support other members through engaging consumers to work directly with them. He asked how that can be done.
Well, that's good. I mean, what services do, such as ours, we have consumer consultants who are actually consumers who now have a formal paid role in serving in a consultancy role within the organization. So they advise us. They work really as a link between patients and community. The other thing is, like in services like ours, we have staff, not many, two staff from our service in Victoria who work with prisons who really follow up everybody who's been identified and involuntarily treated under the Mental Health Act. So when they're getting ready to leave, these people are notified, they make contact, and they make sure that there's going to be linked back to mental health. But the consumer bit is critical, and in our service, it's worked extraordinarily well having consumer advocates who are former, you know, consumers, some of who are essentially stabilized, but know what it's like and can be much better than any of us at being a bridge between individuals in terms of helping them make the transition. So, thank you.
Thanks. Another round of applause and a big thank you Thank you for your time today. There are refreshments. You're welcome to stay and mull further on the important issues that have been raised through this presentation today. We would like to, of course, extend our thanks to the Community Coalition on Corrections and Vina Aushelp, who have jointly convened this forum today. And as we've pointed out, this is the sixth in a series focusing on the new correction facilities in the ACT. You can actually access information, including past audios of the other forums, on the Corrections Coalition website, which is correctionscoalitionact, all as one word, .org.au. And in particular, I think we should thank Bill Bush and Ermgard Reid for the work that they've done in pulling this together today, and Mary Porter MLA for hosting us here in the Assembly. So thank you very much.